Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Civil war in Israel. We'll continue on in our study, 2 Samuel. We're in chapter 2. King Saul has died. David is now poised to take the throne, but behaving himself very cautiously because of his previous behavior. Here he is, if I can use the expression, at the finish line. Saul has been chasing him around for years. At the finish line, David loses heart, and he goes to the land of the Philistines, gets in an alliance and a series of events which we have covered, causing people, very believably, some distrust in David. Saul has now died. David has eulogized him. We're going to pick up at chapter 2, verse 8 of 2 Samuel, as Abner is going to make Ish-bosheth the king of Israel. Civil war will break out. David's men will fight the men of Abner of the house of Saul. People die, all because of sin. David was anointed all the way back in 1 Samuel chapter 16 as a shepherd boy. God obviously was still working, developing him. Saul was serving as the king. David learned much, and now Saul is taken out of the way. David cautiously and wisely behaves himself to ascend to the throne. He's been relocated from Ziklag to Hebron, and in Hebron he was recognized, honored, anointed to be king over Judah. But now Abner is going to make Ish-bosheth the king, and it's sad when God's people can't get along with each other. Abner should accept David as king, but alas, he has selfish desires, and he is going to not recognize David and instead anoint one of Saul's sons. Abner has enjoyed a position in the administration, the leadership of the house of Saul. He was captain of the host, the head of the army. He's enjoyed that position. He is Saul's cousin. I don't know that he had really any particular skills militarily. Matter of fact, I think if we look at the text and the scriptures, we can see I don't think he was qualified to lead. If we consider back in 1 Samuel chapter 14, we're told he is the captain of the host. He's the head of the army. Think about this. Chapter 14. Chapter 17, Israel is in the Valley of Elah facing the Philistines, and out comes Goliath. Where's Abner? Well, Saul didn't step forward. Abner didn't step forward. As a matter of fact, as we read that text, we see that Israel was in terrible fear. Way to go, Abner. We see in 1 Samuel chapter 26, when they're laying in the valley, asleep at night, Saul and his soldiers, David and Abishai sneak down, take the spear and the bolster. They leave, they come back up, and they shout, basically, for the people to wake up. And Abner, your king could have been killed. You didn't do a good job. Abner did not check the cave at En-Gedi when David's men were in there. I don't see too much reason to take hope in Abner as a military leader. But alas, now at the death of Saul, he appoints Ish-bosheth, one of the sons of Saul, to replace him. If you remember, we studied Saul ruled for 40 years. We see that in Acts chapter 13. But now I want you to put that together. Make a note. Saul ruled Israel for 40 years. Please take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 10. 2 Samuel 2:10. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel. So somewhere around the time that Saul was anointed to be king, sometime within a close span, Ishbosheth was born. And Saul was anointed in 1 Samuel 10. So Ishbosheth has been around for a while, but I perceive from the text in reading this, Saul wasn't proud of this kid. Something was apparently wrong. Ishbosheth literally means man of shame. What a name to give your kid. Man of shame. He is not even mentioned in 1 Samuel 14, 49 to 51, where we've got a listing of Saul's family. I perceive this kid, for some reason, didn't please Dad. We really don't see it, but I have to wonder if he's named Man of Shame. Something wasn't real good. Now put that together with Man of Shame. And Saul was not known for being very kind to his wife. What little we know about him and her, he belittled her. He did not speak well of his wife on the few occasions he did. So we do know this. In 2 Samuel 3:7, it tells us that Saul had a concubine, Rizpah. And through her, she bore two boys, Armoni and Mephibosheth. Let's focus for a minute on Mephibosheth. Kind of sounds like Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth means man of shame. Mephibosheth means dispeller of shame. He had a son to replace the one he was ashamed of. Is that pathetic? What little we have in the scriptures about Ishbosheth, though, doesn't say much about this guy. He was not a strong leader. He was not a good leader. He wasn't a leader. 2 Samuel 2:9, Abner, and he made him king over Gilead and over the Asherites and over Jezreel and over Ephraim and over Benjamin, over all Israel. So at Saul's death, Abner, the captain of the host, cousin of Saul, takes Ishbosheth and sets him up and says, you're the next king over Israel. Now David is the king over Judah. Ishbosheth is the king over Israel. Ishbosheth is basically going to be a puppet king. It tells us, we'll see this later, in chapter 3 of 2 Samuel, he feared Abner. Now there's a way to lead, isn't there? Lead out of terror from one who you're supposed to be leading. Only God knows what would have happened had Abner done right. But alas, he did wrong. And when he anointed Ishbosheth to be king, in essence, he declared war on the house of David. Chapter 2, verse 10, Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel and reigned 2 years, but the house of Judah followed David. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. And Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. So we have this coronation of Ishbosheth. And now the civil war, the seeds are there for the strife. Verse 13, and Joab, the son of Zeruiah, that's David's sister, Zeruiah. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met together by the pool at Gibeon. Now in verse 12, Abner went to Gibeon. In verse 13, Joab goes to the pool at Gibeon, and they sat down, the one on the one side of the pool, the other on the other side of the pool. So Abner and his men are on one side of this pool. Joab and his men of David are on the other side of this pool. This event here at the pool is open to discussion. Where is David at this time, and why no prayer? What is David to do? I believe he has probably learned that Ishbosheth has been appointed to be the king. Is he supposed to go to this meeting and put himself in harm's way? Will they assassinate him? What's he supposed to do? Go and negotiate peace? What kind of peace is there to have? God anointed me to be the king. You want me to strike a deal? There's no deal to be struck. So we don't have David on the scene. We don't even know that David has sent Joab and the men there. It doesn't say. There's many things left wide open. It just doesn't say at this time. What's going on? Verse 14, and Abner said to Joab, let the young men now arise and play before us. And Joab said, let them arise. Then there arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertained to Ishbosheth and the son of Saul, and 12 by the servants of David. And they caught every one his fellow by the head and thrust his sword into his fellow's side, so they fell down together, wherefore the place was called Helketh Hazurim, which is in Gibeon. And there was a very sore battle that day, and Abner was beaten and the men of Israel before the servants of David. Now, what is this? The Bible doesn't really tell us key details to make us really unfold this. It says that there were 12 of Abner and 12 of the house of David. Do we assume that they negotiated some kind of a deal? Well, they'll represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And whoever slugs it out and wins, they'll be the king. It doesn't say that. We can only surmise that. Is this not what Goliath did back in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel? One guy come out and fight me, the two of us will settle it, and everybody's done. Go home. But we don't know. It doesn't say. It says they're going to get up and play. But why they're playing with swords, I don't know. I can think of better games to play. And then it talks about the death of many. The bottom line is this. We can speculate a lot of things, but let's focus on what we can factually extract from this passage. Here we have the seed of civil war. They get together. Were they there to negotiate? It doesn't seem like it. If it did, it escalated quickly to violence. The truth is, when you think about this civil war, and this is really a key point that I want us to get out of this passage. Where did it begin? Did it simply begin by Abner anointing Ishbosheth to be the next king? Did it begin when the young men got up to play? Did it begin with Abner and Joab? No. The truth is, the seeds are much deeper. And I want to consider the path to civil war. The Old Testament illustrates biblical truth. And I want us to consider what is illustrated here in the path to the civil war. Now, ultimately, it began, the seeds, in the Garden of Eden, when Eve took of the forbidden fruit. Because that's when sin entered the world, and the sin nature. Well, we're not going to go back that far. We're going to go back and just consider some of the events, and I'm going to pick it up in 1 Samuel. We could go back to Judges. We could go back to Joshua. Maybe there would not have been a civil war if Eli would have been a better father and a spiritually minded high priest. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 29. Words addressed to Eli the high priest. Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation. Here, this is talking to the high priest of Israel. And honorest thy sons above me to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Eli, you were a miserable high priest. Your sons were vile. They literally were immoral with the women that came to the tabernacle. They roughed up the men. They violated the sacrifices. Eli did nothing about it. He was a poor father. He was a poor high priest. It turned the people off, obviously, to the tabernacle, to the law, to the things of the Lord. Terrible discouragement. We have here the seeds of civil war. Even back then, there's unrest. Maybe there would not have been civil war if Samuel would have been a better father and controlled his sons. Take a look at 1 Samuel 8:3. His sons, that's Samuel's sons, walked not in his way, but turned aside after lucre, took bribes, and perverted judgment. Seeds. So what do the people of Israel do? We don't want even your sons to judge us. We want a king. How it would have changed had Samuel been a better father, and his sons would have been controlled. But rather, they were vile. Look at two verses later in verse 5. And said unto him, the people said unto him, Samuel, behold, thou art old, thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. Samuel, we've lost respect for you, and your boys aren't qualified. We want a king. The seeds of rebellion are already back in 1 Samuel 8. How it would have been different, only God knows. Now make us a king. The seeds of rebellion, of civil war. Maybe there would never have been a civil war if the people would have listened to the warnings of the king that Samuel gave. No! And he listed off, if you remember, a series of things that this miserable king is going to do. And they go, yeah, we want a king. How things would have been different if they would have listened to the warnings. 1 Samuel 8:19, nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. Remember, they lost respect for him. Your sons are vile. They refused to obey the voice of Samuel. They said, nay, but we will have a king. The seeds of the civil war are way back here. Well, their king comes up to power, Saul. He is told to wait. Saul does not wait. He goes ahead, steps into the office to do the sacrifice. He was not supposed to do it. And let us read 1 Samuel 13:12. Therefore said I, Saul, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal. I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself. I just couldn't wait for you, Samuel, anymore. And I offered the burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy king upon Israel forever. Verse 14, I know you don't have it. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart. It's over, Saul. You sinned greatly. How things would have been different had he obeyed. Instead, he sinned greatly, and it cost him his kingship, the seeds of civil war. Maybe there would not have been civil war. Listen to this one. If Saul would have fought Goliath. Where were you? You're head and shoulders above everybody in Israel, and why didn't you step up to the plate? But you see, he didn't. So what happened? A little shepherd boy named David went out there. He killed Goliath, routed the Philistine army, and the women said, David has his 10,000s and Saul his 1,000s. Saul got jealous, and from that day forward looked to kill David. The seeds of civil war. Brewing in one man's heart. 1 Samuel 18:8, and Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him, and said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but 1,000s. What can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward, the seeds of the civil war. Maybe things would have been different. There maybe have been no civil war if Saul would not have gotten jealous of David. Look at verse 11. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. Remember, at this time, Abner is the captain of the host. Seeds of civil war. Maybe there would have been no civil war had David not left Judah for the land of the Philistines. 1 Samuel 27:1, David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in the coast of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. Oh, David, David. And David got there. He got himself in an alliance with the Philistines. He almost went to battle with them. Ziklag burned. He paid a dear price. And people, he had to earn their respect again. Here he is, the next king of Israel in the land of the Philistines. Oh, David. Maybe things would have been different, and maybe there would have been no civil war if Saul had acknowledged his sin, surrendered the throne to David, and not gone to see a witch at Endor. The night before the battle with the Philistines, he went to a witch. Out of his own mouth, he decreed that this ought not to be before Israel. He violates his own rule. He goes to the witch, and she pulls up Samuel. And I think it's interesting as you read that account as how the witch at Endor, whatever she did to bring Samuel from the afterlife, God did not tell us how she did it. Do you know why? Because we'd try it. That's why. Look what Samuel said to Saul. He was brought back to face Saul. 28:19 of 1 Samuel. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me, and the Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. What would have happened had Saul bowed his head and said, I have sinned greatly, I will give the throne to David? We don't know. But instead, he did not change. He still went into battle. He ignored the warnings of Samuel, as he was wont to do in many other times, not listen. And he paid a dear price, and so did the nation of Israel. Believably, there would have been no civil war if Abner would have accepted David as the king. And believably, there would have been no civil war if Ishbosheth would not have accepted the coronation by Abner to be the king of Israel. The path to this civil war was paved with human failures, sin. The problems are deep-rooted from old. It was not simply Abner ordaining Ishbosheth to be the king. The feelings are deep-rooted. There's selfishness. There's rebellion. There's hatred. This is the problem when we get into people's lives and you try to untangle things. I can think of times I have counseled married couples. It's not simply a matter of what happened yesterday. 10 years ago, so-and-so was unfaithful. You don't just wipe that away. And it's deep-rooted. The truth is, problems are deep-rooted. But we have got to, as Christians, move on. Learn from the past. Yes, except that is how we got into the situation today. Now what? But don't you know? Okay, I believe you. Now what? Now what? Why don't we start doing right today? Let's end this miserable cycle, because the past is not a good excuse for ill behavior today. Believably, the past is miserable and the problems are deep-rooted, as we just saw with Israel. But we cannot use these as an excuse to not do right. This battle recorded in 2 Samuel 2, where these young men went out to play, resulted in people dying and families broken. 2 Samuel 2:30. And Joab returned from following Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, there lacked of David's servants 19 men and Asahel. 20 men of David died, But the servants of David had smitten of Benjamin and Abner's men, so that 360 men died. 360. Why? Sin. Deep-rooted sin. Going back throughout the years. It began with 12 and 12, 2 Samuel 2:15. Then there arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin that pertained to Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. It started out 12 and 12, and it ended up 20 men of David died, 360 of Saul died. Or shall I say, of Abner died. And it is the beginning of civil war. These deaths believably could have been avoided if the things of the past had been different. But surely it would have been avoided if the people that were there at that time, that day, would have chosen right in spite of the past. We are allowed to recognize that the past has been wrong, but we must never use that as an excuse to do wrong today. I want us truly to come to grips with our sin. Several times it is listed in the Old Testament. I want to just give you one. Exodus chapter 20, verse 5. This is right in the middle, if you will, of the law, the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not bow thyself down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. Listen to this. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Visiting the iniquity of the father upon the children unto the third and the fourth generation. Listen carefully. That is not saying, if I murdered somebody, my son gets executed. But it is saying this. If I as a father sin, it will have an effect on my children. If the father is a drunk, it will affect the children until the third and the fourth generation. Are we listening? The sins that we do today will affect our great-grandchildren. That ought to be sobering. We need to leave a better legacy. The things that we do, as we saw in 1 Samuel, they led up. They were seeds of civil war. The bitterness, the rebellion in the heart of Saul. The failure of Eli to be the priest he should have been and to discipline his sons. The people of Israel to not want the way of the Lord to take the judges, but rather to demand a king, seeds. And those seeds of rebellion were passed on until finally the nation will break out in civil war. But I have good news for you. Take a look at Psalm 103:17. But the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting. Underline this. Upon them that fear him and his righteousness, get it, unto the children's children. What we do wrong extends to the third and the fourth generation, and what we do right in righteousness will extend to our children's children. It is very important what we do, because our sin is very social and it will affect future generations. We are here where we are in this world today because of the behavior, right, wrong, of those that went before us. We must learn from that, but we're not allowed to use it as an excuse to do wrong. We need to learn from the past and do right no matter what.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.